UFC Vegas 110, the official recap. And I mean, the night started out pretty smooth enough and then got interesting, got wild. It kind of feels like the last, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 weeks of UFC cards have like always featured some weird thing going on. Either Jake Matthews wins and then they call it off and then they reset the fight and then Neil Magny ends up beating him, or somebody gets poked in the eye and they can't continue, or someone gets poked in the eye and can continue, and the restarting fights and the judging has just been awful, and as it usually is, potentially a betting fix on this card. So just so much to unpack for some random ass shitty Apex fight night. And if you were going to work a fight on a card, you'd want it to be one of these low key flying under the radar cards, not some giant pay-per-view that everybody's watching. So interesting theories to be had. So let's get there. But we got to start with the first fight, of course, and that is Talita Allen Carr versus Arianne Carnelosi. Yeah, not much to it. Talita Allen Carr was on the last fight of her deal, so she knew she had to come out here and win and look good doing it. And I don't think she looked bad, but it wasn't like it was an overwhelmingly good performance. She is a jiu-jitsu ace. That's where she's at her best. But yeah, the first round, 2 for 4 on takedowns, landed Carnelosi 18-1, was able to maintain some position on the ground to end off the round. So yeah, she wins the first round. Second round, it looks like Carnelosi is having some better moments standing. She's kind of bum rushing forward, throwing some wild hooks, but it's wild. A lot of it's missing. She's fighting like a poor man's version of Jessica Andrade, and it's just not really working for her. Carnelosi eventually gets taken down again, much of the same. At the end of the second round, she gets caught in a rear naked choke that quite literally, if there's 1 second left in the second round, she finishes her by rear naked choke right then and there. Round ends. So my question on that one, not that this is a fight to spend too much time talking about, but my question on that one is, if you've got someone dead to rights, let's say it's a TKO and you're punching and the ref's right about to jump in and the 1 second buzzes, or in this case, you've got a choke that her hand's hovering. When she got let go, she's half dazed. The ref asks her to stand up. She takes a few seconds and then stands up. My question would be, does that not just automatically make it a 10-8? Like, even if the first majority of the round wasn't overly one-sided, being that close to a finish, should that not just like automatically be a 10-8? I guess it really doesn't matter. But she wins the round. In the third round, she does the exact same thing. This time, she's got a little more time to work, 20 seconds or something. 24 seconds. And does get the rear naked choke. So I'm sure that they'll re-sign her. And for girls that have limited takedown defense and limited grappling, she's going to be a problem. She can get you to the ground, no doubt about it. Her striking didn't look great. But again, she had a superior skill set with her grappling, and she just got right to that early and often. It made it happen. For Carnelosi, where do you go from here? Probably nowhere. Big losing record with the promotion. Hasn't looked good in a long time. Very few matchups that you're going to excel in. And this is a fight that you could at least be competitive in, but your lack of takedown defense against Allen Carr, who's not exactly the biggest threat with the wrestling, yeah, all just way too problematic. So she'll probably be released. And then Allen Carr, hopefully she re-signs the deal and they give her a better matchup her next time out. Seo-Kyung Ko versus Phil Rowe. Ko versus Rowe. This one went about exactly as we expected, which is nice because not everything's ever going to go as planned. But this one really came down to Ko likes to engage in the clinch, usually up against the cage. He's got a good single leg takedown. He likes to wrestle early and often. He's got a really good gas tank. Rowe, meanwhile, the problem with Rowe is that BJJ black belt, and he can strike, and that's all the good stuff. But he can't stuff takedowns, and his get-up game's not particularly good. And that was legit just the story of the fight. Ko took him down twice in the first round for 4.5 minutes of control time. Like, huge. That was struck him 13-1. The totals, 36-1. I'm not going to call this a 10-8 round because there's not enough damage. But I mean, if you're just looking for domination and control time, yeah, I mean, that was it. The second round, well, Ko knows he can do the exact same thing, so well, he does. One takedown, 4 minutes and 32 seconds of control time. The totals, 47-4. Insane. What's more insane is that Phil Rowe's corner is not giving him any type of advice at all. Like, they keep going to the corner. They go to his coaches between rounds, and they're just like, Phil, time for a big moment. Gotta go, big moment now, time, Phil. It's like they either just know he's screwed or they've got no intangible advice to give him. But Phil, I mean, at this point, his best case is just throwing a knee up the middle and trying to land as this guy shoots a double leg. But he's not shooting double legs. He's shooting single legs from the outside. Phil just can't get a read on it. He can't do nothing about it. And third round's exactly the same. I mean, listen, if this sport always went down like this, you this guy's just going to take control and maintain. What was the total on this one? 13 minutes and 10 seconds of control time. Outstrike him on the totals, 124 to 11. This would be easy sport to bet. Fortunately, it doesn't always pan out this way. It was nice that this one did work out and that Ko went out there. He fought his best skill set, which is his wrestling. He stuck to it. He didn't try to have some entertaining fight where he brawled in the pocket. And Phil Rowe didn't really make any improvements to his takedown defense, so it just happened to line up. Phil's still a dangerous fighter, you know. Again, when you say, oh, Carnelosi is a poor man's Jessica Andrade, just because Jessica Andrade is very good. This is, they're trying to do the same thing. They're just not on the same level. Phil Rowe is very much like a Neil Magny in that he's good at surviving the first couple rounds and then turns it up big time in the third. But Magny can wrestle, and Magny's got good great durability, but enough to just, you know, grind away those first two rounds, and then that third round, Neil Magny's a real thing. Phil Rowe's last two wins, third round stoppages. It's what he does. And against a certain level of competition, he can make it happen. He's fun. He's exciting. They'll keep him on the roster. But against a guy like Ko that's not going to have a fun fight with you, he's strictly looking to Korean Khabib your ass. His nickname's Korean Tyson. He's not fighting like that. He's fighting like Korean Khabib. Kill his face, take you down, melt like cheese on top of you, no room to explode, no room to get back up. He doesn't even particularly go for the back. He's just hip riding you. Goes for wrist control, lands some good ground and pound. He's not boring because he's constantly landing elbows. Look at this, 124 total strikes. They say 36 are significant. Well, that's up to them. He was working the whole time. I never thought it was a boring fight. Maybe that's because I had him bet. I don't know. Maybe people feel different on that one and they were like, no, man, I want to see him stand and bang. As a bettor, I don't want to see these guys divert or, you know, get away from the best plan of victory. At least he went for it. Not everybody did on this card, but Ko at least did what he was supposed to do. At least Ardeline versus Montserrat Ruiz. Again, it's like Ardeline was, I think, yeah, he was the biggest favorite on the card. Minus 400. The line wasn't really moving. I don't think anybody was super stoked to get on at least Ardeline at minus 400 play. But yeah, I mean, Ruiz, I'm not saying like brought in to lose. I don't think it's anything that nefarious, but she's 0-3 in the UFC. She's 1-3 in the UFC. Her last number of fights have not looked good. She's not been active whatsoever. Very, very small for the division. Good argument that she should be released, but you keep her around because a girl like Ardeline has a huge social media following. Apparently, there's some hype about her, and she's no doubt making improvements. First time she fought in the UFC, it was a joke against Shauna Bannon. She lost to Shauna Bannon. Shauna Bannon's only beaten two girls, her and Puya Tomar. So, yeah, you're in bad company. She didn't look good, but I mean, yeah, she didn't have a ton of experience. It was mostly low-level fights she's had, and she's not a full-time fighter. She's a social media influencer. Second fight against Melissa Martinez, all of a sudden, it's like she landed 92 significant strikes over a girl that was like a three-time amateur kickboxing champion in Mexico, and whose brother David Martinez fights in the UFC and is quite good. Lost. But looked way better. And then these last two fights against Ryan Dos Santos. You know, Ryan's BJJ black belt went like 1-for-6 on takedowns, 30 seconds of control time. Ardeline's ground game looked better. She's big for the division. She's physically strong. And she showed that against Ruiz as well. Ruiz shot a couple takedowns, but Ardeline was prepared for it. She was prepared for the head and arm. She did get hit with a bunch of overhand lefts in the first 2-3 minutes, but then she made the adjustments on it. She made the reads. She started jabbing and then coming out of the way, letting the overhand left miss, and then countering back with two shots of her own. Scored a takedown at the end of rounds just to make it look good. It was a nice performance. It's not I'm going to be a top five fighter in the division, but this is not just some social media influencer. She's training. She's training hard. And she's making improvements. And yeah, she beat Ruiz. Ugh, that was the layup of the division. But, I mean, there's a lot of these, you know, lighter fights in the division. In fact, if you wanted to, run Hearn versus Shauna Bannon back. You know, I don't know if Melissa Martinez is still on the roster. Well, I mean, she might be. She's only 1-2. Run that one back. You know, it's like she's making improvements. There's a bottom level of this division that I think she can definitely contend with. And she moves the needle a little bit and her following wants to see her compete. This is a win for the UFC. She's one of these, I'm not going to say a CM Punk. He's international. He's big. This is a girl with 650,000 Instagram followers and I don't know, a million TikTok followers of that. But he couldn't fight at all. So what do you do with him? She can actually fight. So there's something you can do with that. Norman Dumont versus Caitlin Vieira. Norma, total babe. So she can actually fight. There's something you can do with that. She can. Honestly, like I felt Caitlin Vieira won, but this is not a robbery. And I understand people are upset about it and they disagree and you have the right to disagree. Absolutely. You, myself included. I disagree because I scored it for Caitlin Vieira, but I wouldn't cry robbery and say that, I got unjustly screwed and the judges let me down again. Like, it wasn't that much of a runaway fight. First round, actually, I guess when you think about it, yeah, first round Norma Dumont, right? Yeah, just looking at the numbers, it tells you everything you need to know. Dumont really did outstrike her in every round, right? It just comes down to the takedowns from Ketlen Vieira. This is actually interesting. This is the first time I'm looking at the numbers, and then I got a basis on what I watched last night. But I thought Ketlen Vieira won the first round. Looking at it, she got outstruck 17-7, 25-7 in the total strikes. And yeah, she did. Ketlen got a takedown, and she was able to go for the submission attempt, the head and arm choke. Minute 30 seconds of control time. So here's what you're left with. One girl got doubled up in the significant strikes. She got tripled up in the total strikes, but she had a moment where she had a head and arm choke. And visually, from what I'm watching last night, and I think most people do, that looks really good, but it doesn't submit her and it doesn't do any damage. It just looks good. I have someone's head connected to their neck. I'm going for the carotid artery and I'm squeezing this thing. And she's giving thumbs up. Dumont's giving thumbs up. Like, she's not like, oh my God, I'm about to dab. She's fine. It just looks good. Then when you look at the numbers, it's like, well, Dumont actually landed all of the shots. But to me, the submission attempt, the takedown, a little bit of control time. And then Ketlen landed a couple good shots as well. Good left hook landed. I scored the first round for her. Second round, it's the same thing. I scored it for Ketlen Vieira because the total strikes is 32 to 20. There was the takedown, but the first 2.5 minutes of the round is Norma Dumont landing the better shot standing. Then, once Ketlen Vieira does get the takedown, she rides out the last minute 53 on top, but doesn't really do anything, obviously, that they considered significant. Just a lot of totals, just little grinding shots. But for me, the takedown and almost 2 minutes of control time to end the round and the little shots was just enough to edge it out. Where we got this one wrong is that the judges thought the bigger shots from Norma Dumont in the first half of the round outweighed the small pitter-patter shots and the control time that Vieira had in the second half of the round. And so they're not totally wrong, right? What are we doing here? We're trying to fight. And what's the number one scoring criteria is like damage. And so one girl doubled her up in significant strikes and landed the more damage. The other girl was able to hold her. And if she was to go do what Ko did, right, which is he had not a whole lot of significant strikes, but a bunch of total. Well, those are big totals. He landed like 124 total. You got to be really active with those small shots. It's not enough to just do a few small shots and hope that they're looking at, oh, well, you're on top. Jose Aldo and Andre Pineros, they were looking at that. They were saying, what the hell's up here? But the reality of it is, didn't do enough to 100% without a shadow of a doubt have won the round. So I had it up, Vieira up 2-0. The judges, apparently, two of the judges, had it 1-1. And then, so yeah, I mean, the onus is still on Ketlen Vieira to go out and win this third round, but yet she doesn't even shoot any takedowns. She only won the first round because of the takedown, which led to a submission attempt. She only, in my opinion, won the second round because she's getting lit up standing, but she gets the takedown in that control time. The third round, she doesn't even attempt a single takedown. So you did it to yourself. You could have just tried to maybe win the third round. She was tired. Now she was coasting. Aldo and Pineros are telling her she's up 2 rounds. That's why they're so livid, because they're sure she's up 2 rounds. Two judges had a 1-1. Go out there and just win the third round. And what was the only success you've been having in this fight to this point? The few times that I was taking her down. Okay, sweet. Why would you not even attempt that in the third at all? She's just in coast mode. I'm just going to survive. As a result, Dumont had, far better numbers. Tripled her up in the significant strikes. Doubled her up in the total strikes. Got held up against the cage a little bit here and there, but for the most part was just trying to fight. And then so if this is one championship, or this was Pride back in the day, or this is any league that says, well, who won the fight as a whole? It's Dumont. Dumont's actually trying to fight. Vieira is looking to avoid and slow the pace down. And so I can't cry robbery. I can't be like, oh, no, man, that's such bullshit. And for the record, the guys in the Discord know, the guys over in the Bookie Beatdown Patreon know, we had a plus 175 Vieira by decision ticket, and it would have been nice to hit it. Absolutely, it would have been nice to hit it. But I'm not gonna sit here and cry and be like the sport's corrupt. Well, we'll get to the sport's corrupt, but you know, this one was just, it was actually a close fight and we didn't get the bounce. I can't sit here and whine about that. Dante Johnson versus Cedric Dumas. Talking about props, I thought Johnson would knock him out in the first round. Not like just he's so good and this guy's the next big thing and he's going to hit Cedric Dumas one time and put him over. Just I thought he was going to come forward and chuck big bombs. Although he was capable of doing it, initially Dumas shot the takedown, which was a nice little wrinkle to his game. Why not take this guy down? And he held him down for 2 minutes. And then Johnson was cool, man. Never been outside of the first round before. And is known for just kind of walking forward and chucking those big old bungalows. But in this case, he gets taken down. He's just got like one knee up, one knee down, up against the cage, fighting hands. Dumas is kind of not on his back, but like trying to hip ride from the top. And he's just looking over at his corner, thumbs up, like, chill, calm. We're all good. We're all good. You like to see that from a guy, that maturity. He's young in his MMA career. He's got less than 10 pro fights. He's been fighting for like 3 years or something. Former football player. Doesn't have a wrestling background. Finished everybody in the first round. And yet, he's not letting this moment get to him. He's very calm about it. Yeah, he let himself get controlled by Cedric Dumas for about 2 minutes. But he bided his time. He got back up. And then where I thought he would get back up and unload, he got back up and tried shooting takedowns of his own. I kind of pegged him as more of a striker in his amateur career and his pro career. He's never subbed an opponent. Pretty sure all of his wins are by knockout. But again, he wanted to show a different wrinkle to his game as well. And he went 3 for 3 for takedowns, got 3 minutes of control time, won back the round, had a submission attempt. It was interesting. It was like, oh, okay. I didn't really think that was, you know, in the cards for him. Second round, he comes out, lands a couple good shots. And then, it just leads to, I don't want to say Dumas quit, but you could tell after the first 3 minutes of the fight that he was definitely slowing down. I wouldn't say he's not had a full training camp, but he's had troubles with the law and he gets these ankle monitors. And I've been told you can't really like sweat extensively with his ankle monitor on because it causes it to go all weird. I don't know, because why doesn't taking a shower affect or taking a bath? I don't know. I've never had an ankle monitor, but it's hard to probably get full training and throw those big kicks with that leg and grapple with guys and wrestle when you have an ankle monitor. I was all I can assume. It doesn't really matter how long he's had it off. He was able to do this and he was able to get around it by doing that. You got to figure a guy like this is not in shape. All of his fights, you can check out all of his fights, it's very low volume, right? 34 strikes, 17, 20, 49. 49 is his career high. Like, it's an absolute punching bag of an opponent, Dennis Tulin. He's able to put up a career high 49. Outside of that, everything's very low because I just don't think he's got the gas tank for anything. Johnson, who you don't know if he's got a gas tank, you've never seen him fight beyond 5 minutes. He really just pushed the pace on him. Maybe he could have gone out there and got that first round knockout by swinging hard. And I believe he could have, just didn't materialize. He decided to take the smarter approach, which is I'm just going to wrestle this guy to tire him out. And once he tires himself out, he's going to break. And he did. And then he got tapped by the guillotine choke. So, yeah, Dante Johnson is still at 185. He's still a small guy. He's 5'8". And the division is much taller, but he fights a unique style where, unlike Torrence Finney is very short and can wrestle. This guy's short, has shown that he's going to try to wrestle, which is going to be nice, but he's got big, big power and a willingness to throw big punches, come forward, and then shoot takedowns. He'll be a problem for some guys. He's still young. He's still got not a whole lot of experience in the fight game. Give this guy a few years. Dante Johnson could form into one of these just shorter guys that are able to give guys like a Roy Nelson type, where, you know, he's shorter and he's stockier, but he's got killer power, great overhands. And because he can also grapple, he'll be a problem for a lot of the guys in the division. I think he's a good prospect, not a great prospect, but a pretty good prospect. Timmy Kwamba versus Cheng Ho Lee. Got this one wrong. But yeah, good fight, back and forth. It looked like in the first round, like it was going to be easy money. I mean, Cheng Ho Lee just took his back and controlled him for 452. Backpack, body triangle in, holds on, that's it. Total strikes, 49-2. The significant strikes, 1-0. It's hard to land a significant strike when you're in a standing backpack. Or when you got a standing body triangle on a guy, then it's like, it's hard to generate anything. If you got a body triangle on the guy and he's flattened out or something, you can land some big shots. But this is mostly just a round of control time. He took his back. He couldn't get the sub, which is fine. He never really tried for the sub. He just positionally held it down. All he needs to now do is positionally hold it down for one of these other rounds. And he couldn't. Kwanba did an excellent job just wrestling, counter-wrestling. When he would get taken down, he didn't accept the position. When he got back up, he was throwing some flying knees. He was the rangier fighter. And one thing that I will admit, this is a total mistake on my part, is that Timmy Kwanba was dropping down to 135 pounds for this fight. And that went over my head. So that is a total blunder on my part. Not that it would have, like, drastically changed anything. Lee was lower on the priorities. Lee wasn't, we weren't touting him as some type of lock or anything like that. Just it kind of made a lot of sense how this one played out, is that when you look at Kwanba, who's still only 26, kid's born in 1999, he trains in Las Vegas with some of the best guys in the sport. We knew he was going to be getting better. But yeah, Balaji Oki's a big boy, man. Lucas Almeida, for his faults, is a pretty big guy. Like 135 pounds, he was big in there. He looked big. He looked solid. First round, he gave up his back. He got taken down. Well, that shit sometimes happens. After that, he made all the adjustments he needed to do. Again, was able to counter wrestle, land the better shots. One's rounds two, one round three. Quality performance. Lee gets his five-fight winning streak snapped. He, you know, was undefeated in the UFC at 2-0. He picks up his first loss. That's not a bad loss. It's just, yeah, you got to make some adjustments in there. You got to be able to do more than just wrestle and get a minute and a half of control time here and there. Your striking definitely needs some work. But it's no knock on Kwanba. I think he showed up, prepared, looked better at 135, looked big for the weight class, looked like he was making some improvements, overcame a bad first round. Yeah, you can't knock him on it. So Timmy Kwanba with the win. Billy Alakanin versus Kevin Christian. Yeah, kind of a comical fight. I mean, Kevin Christian, big, tall, 6'7". It was fun to see while it was. They were throwing some strikes standing, and then boom, as soon as Billy Alakanin was to get an opportunity on the ground, he just grabs his neck and jokes him out unconscious. So Billy is another one of these guys. He's out of Las Vegas full-time. He gets in a lot of quality work, and like where he's not great, the Bogdan Guskov fight, he takes on super short notice, wins the first round, wins the first 4 minutes of the first round, and then, yeah, whatever, he was on short notice against a guy that's not terrible. Guskov's really not bad at all. Second fight against Ibo Aslan, it was a terrible fight. It was a god-awful fight, but he was the betting underdog. He was a considerable betting underdog, and he won that fight. Moved around, fought a smart game plan, and then this one's much of the same, you know? Striking didn't look terrible. His speed looked pretty decent, and then the second he got an opportunity on the ground to grab the neck, he did so and capitalized with a beautiful first-round finish. The knockdown was nice as well. But again, yeah, I just think, like, his striking looked good. He was fighting range. Even though you're fighting at 6'7", you know, like, he seemed like he was on top of the distance and the management of time a lot better than this, like, big, rangy guy. Yeah, I mean, you can't say, wow, phenomenal performance. Billy Alcan is the man. He's going big places just because the level of competition is low. And very much, I will admit, it's the exact same thing with Dante Johnson. I think he's a good prospect, but you're beating Cedric Dumas. It's not the greatest indicator, but I'm not saying these guys are going to challenge for anything tomorrow. Just you need to give them time. And whereas Billy was a bit of a write-off, you can see he's clearly trending in the right direction. A guy like Dante Johnson, he's answering questions. They're making improvements. It's what the game's all about, right? You're only as good as your last fight. And so you just want to keep improving on those. Cody Durden versus Alan Nascimento. So we definitely need Alan Nascimento here. He ended up being a top ticket guy. He's the second biggest favorite on the card, biggest male fighter favorite on the card from the male division. Biggest favorite, obviously, at least Ardeline over on the women's MMA side of things. But again, this one kind of went the way you thought it might go. It was going to be greasy early simply because Cody Durden's a dog. Absolute dog, man. He takes fights short notice. This is a catch weight of 130, so you can't say, like, oh, he takes fights on short notice and makes the weight. But he'll take a fight on short notice. Hey, I'm not in shape. Hey, I'm a little bit big right now. I'll show up. Toughest guys in the division routinely. Guys fought the likes of Alan Nascimento, Jose Ochoa, Josh Van, who are three of the top 10 guys of the division. Bruno Silva, gatekeeper to the stars, best gatekeeper of the division, Bruno Silva. Tagir Ulyanbekov, top five guy of the division. He's got wins over Charles Johnson. He's fought Makhachev, not that one was competitive, but he fought him all the same. Fought Chris Gutierrez on short notice, up a weight class at 135 in his debut, and got a stupid-ass draw. They gave him 10-8 first round, and I still don't get that one. What I'm saying is he's an anywhere, anytime kind of guy. And for the most part, when you watch him versus Josh Van, man, he's competitive in that first round. Him versus Bruno Silva, he's kicking Bruno Silva's ass to start that fight out. And then he gets caught. Him versus Van just eventually overwhelms him. Him versus Ochoa, they are slinging leather. He gets a couple takedowns. Ochoa pops back up, knocks him out. Him versus Alan Nascimento is the same thing. This guy is not a bump at all. He can contend for the first 3-4 minutes. And as much as it is very respectable that he's taking these fights on short notice all the time, he's leaving himself in that situation where it's like, I'm going to have to just be kill or be killed. Don't really have the cardio to go the full 15 minutes on short notice. So what I can do is push a hell of a pace for 7.5 minutes. And either I put this guy away or he's going to put me away. But either way, we're going to be in contention to win a $50,000 fight of the night bonus. The UFC, it knows I'm a company guy. Anytime, anywhere, any place. My fights are always exciting. I think he's got job security. Why would the UFC want to cut this guy? He'll fight at 125. He'll fight at 135. He'll take the worst guy in the division. He'll take the best guy in the division. He don't give a shit. Always shows up. Doesn't pull out. Doesn't stunt and, you know, fake an injury here or there. Like, gives you his best go. It's just against guys like Alan Nascimento, who maybe can just early that weather storm, that weather that early storm. Probably not going to work out. And that was it for the first round. I mean, yeah, he got one takedown. It wasn't a takedown. He just kind of grabbed his leg and threw him over real quick for a couple seconds. But the main thing was Durden, the first 4 minutes, is just coming forward. He's landing right hands. He's aggressive. He's largely just trying to beat him up from the pocket. But Nascimento's not even shooting takedowns. He shot basically nothing. They got a credit as shooting one. He hardly tried to do nothing with the takedowns. Instead, he was content with just letting Durden hit him. And you know, I'm not saying Homer Simpson him and let him punch himself out, but by the last minute of the round, Nascimento starts to come, maybe the last 90 seconds, Nascimento starts to come on. He lands a knee up the middle. He lands a decent head kick. He lands a beautiful left hook. It's kind of like this fight's going to get very chaotic. You're going to start to slow and make one mistake. And all I need to do is just capitalize on that one mistake. And you're going to make it. No, you're going to make it. How do I know you're going to make it? Because you've made just one mistake in a lot of these fights that you lose. You know, he's winning against Bruno Silva, then he makes one mistake and he gets knocked out. Or he's, you know, pushing the pace and he's getting aggressive and he's winning some minutes and then he gets caught by something. So I think Nascimento did the tape on that. He realized what he was getting himself into and he just kind of waited for Cody Durden to make the mistake. The second round, that's what happened. Durden starts the round good. It doesn't look like he's fatiguing. He's coming forward. He looks fast. He looks strong, but he's got a tendency to dip down constantly. It's not like he's crouching, but when he throws, he dips down. When he darts in, he dips down. When you grab the back of his head like it's going to be a tie clinch, his version of getting out of it is to dip his head out. And I feel like that's why Nascimento starts throwing. He threw a flying knee, and he kept trying to grab the tie clinch. And then even when he would grab it like he was going to knee, Durden would start moving his head down and out. He was trying to hit him with the left hook because that's the way he was moving or line him up into the head kick. So it was just a matter of I'm going to hit him with something and it'll put him down and I'll jump on top, or I'm going to hit him with something to hurt him and he'll shoot the desperation takedown into the choke. But he was not trying to take Cody Durden down. That wasn't the game plan. He shot no takedowns. But eventually he landed the one shot. Landed the one shot, it causes Cody to get wobbled. Cody instinctively, I'm going to shoot a takedown, which that ends up being the worst place you can be. Nascimento knocking you out, not that it's impossible. It's on the table. It's really not how he wins fights. He wins fights is when you present your neck to him, he grabs it. So Durden's hurt, and it's very tough to tell somebody who's hurt, just stand there and keep getting more hurt. It's like, no, I'm just going to shoot a takedown and slow this thing down. But shooting the takedown, you're officially giving your resignation. You're done here. It's not going to happen no more. If you stand and take the punches, you can, I don't know, try to clinch standing or try to push him into the cage or try to use your feet to get out of the way. Like, Gotta keep moving. I don't know. Coulda, shoulda, woulda. Just Durden eventually shoots the takedown, and unfortunately, it's right into an anaconda choke. Not to take anything away from Alan Nascimento. It's a beautiful performance. That fight's done either way, but his toes are in the cage, and you can see Durden initially push the hip or push the knee to get his leg out so that at least you do have the real deep bite on the anaconda, but at least he was not being controlled. His bodies or his legs were still free, and then Nascimento readjusted and put his toes in the cage, and the ref's standing right there. And you can see clear as day, his toes are lodged in the cage so he can get some extra torque on this thing. And man, the ref didn't care. And maybe Durden would have got out. Maybe he wouldn't have. It looked like he was in a bad spot and the end was near. So I don't think anybody has the right to complain. But it's just little inconsistencies like that in reffing. Because sometimes make a difference. Daniel Frunze versus Charles Radke. Oh, I will be the first one to say this is a really bad pick on my part. And Again, it's not one of these, I told you Frunza was the lock and Frunza was going to make some money and Frunza was, it was nothing like that. It's just, I have to make picks, all the fights on the card. You know how we do this. And Frunza is the side. I don't apologize when Chang Ho Lee lost. I had Chang Ho Lee, and I don't apologize about that. He won the first round. He looked pretty decent in the first round. The second and the third round were close. Unfortunately, Kwamba showed up. There's nothing to apologize for. Something like Frunza, this guy's very, very, very bad. Very bad. Very bad. And at no point was close. And they could run this fight back 10 times, and this is what happens in all 10 scenarios. So the fact that I even suggested that this guy had a chance to win, and let alone I said he could win by TKO, and there was a nice +275 TKO prop out there. All of that only exists in the universe where Charles Rackey only decides to stand and bang with him. Charles Rackey, obviously not stupid, just got knocked out in his last fight, so he decided to just take the path of least resistance. Rackey can wrestle, 100% he can. I want to say he's a black belt. He might not quite be a black belt, but he's done a lot of grappling tournaments. He's got a win over Eric Anders and one of those Fury Grappling Pro where it came down to a win by takedown, but it's not bad. You've seen in his fight with his blood diamond, everyone booed it because Charles Rackey racked up 9 minutes and 41 seconds of control time against the fence. Now, this fight was in Adesanya versus Strickland. It was in Sydney, Australia, right? And you're fighting Blood Diamond, who's Adesanya's buddy in Australia. And you just held him up against the cage for 9 minutes and 40 seconds, and everybody booed. And on the mic afterwards, he was like, yeah, I don't care, I won. Your guy couldn't do nothing about it. That's on you. So that's the approach you took in here. I don't want to stand and bang like I did with Milan. I don't want to stand and bang like I did against Semmelsberger. I don't want to taste that like I did against Carlos Prates. I'm just going to take this guy down. He can't wrestle. Not only can he not wrestle, he has no get-up game. So I just need one takedown in the first round and one takedown in the second round and one takedown in the third round, and then this thing's over. Yeah, he chokes him out with 31 seconds left on the clock. Frunza couldn't even make it to decision. But it was just pure one-sided domination the entire time. Awful, awful read on Frunza. My apologies. If anybody lost money on that one, because there's really nothing redeemable about that, to be honest with you. So yeah, he's only 0-2 in the UFC, but I would imagine they cut him simply because his fight with Riz McKee, he gets knocked down 3 times, eye swells shut, they stop it, and it was fun. He was coming forward trying to throw punches, and now he just absolutely gets decimated on the ground by Charles Rackey. So if you can't strike with guys like Riz McKee, and you can't wrestle even in the slightest bit with guys like Charles Rackey, there's really not like winnable fights for you in the UFC. There's guys that they might want to build, and you're the guy that they're going to bring in so this guy can get a quote unquote easy win. But it's like, is that the role you want? Is that where your career is at? You're 0-2 in the UFC. Is it better to go 0-3 or 0-4 in the UFC? Frunza will never again be on any of my tickets. Even if you give him a Rock'em Sock'em Robot fight against the worst guy in the division, and Riz McKee's not the worst guy in the division. Riz McKee's known for being tall, lengthy, good control time, good leverage. He drops you 3 times and puts your face look like a minced meat. And now Radke looks like Jordan Burroughs in there against you. Where do you go from that? I don't know. You could say, if the UFC was like, oh, Thembo Garimbo, you know, we're not out on the Thembo Garimbo bandwagon yet, and he really needs a win. Well, a guy like Garimbo kills Daniel Frunza. But you're really dealing with the low level of the division. Even if you're willing to build a guy up, you know, what's his long-term potential? Like, is it worth building a guy up at when you're that low? I don't know. I think they'll cut him. I think just because of the contender series signing like 46 guys, and you saw last week them cutting guys coming off wins like Hamdi, and them letting Alan Carfighter contract out, even though I think they'll resign her, they're looking to cut. And guys like this are probably on the chopping block. Yair Dalval versus Isaac Dalgarian. So this was the big story of the night. Everyone's probably alert about the happenings of it, so I'll just give my opinion on it. The line moves 125 points in about 2 hours leading up to the fight. if it was a regional show, like if you were betting LFA or you were betting CFFC, it wouldn't take much to do that. If you just max bet thing a couple times, it would move a couple hundred points. But on stuff like the UFC, where there's millions of dollars being bet, and every week, every card, lots of action coming in, it would take a substantial amount of money in order to move the line that quickly, and that substantially. So somebody goes into the Hard Rock in Las Vegas and drops, they say, four very large bets, specifically on Del Valle by first round submission. That causes Hard Rock to get a red flag, and then they put out some red flags, and then U.S. Integrity becomes aware of it. Some books drop the fight altogether. Some fights just refuse to take action on the props. Some books just took the steam, and then all of a sudden the line moved from a minus 240 Dalgarian to a minus 125 Dalgarian, effectively moving the fight at 120 points. The most common thing that probably happened is just the leak of an injury. Like, not to say, oh, it's 100% a fix and this guy agreed to take a dive and he's a training partner of James Krause and he knows James Krause and he saw the Derek Minner thing. Like, that's all the great conspiracy stuff. The most likely thing here is that he has an injury. This injury gets released. So someone from his team says, Isaac has a broken rib and last night in shakeout is giving him problems. And he's told us that he's basically the fight's going to start and he's just going to shoot a takedown. And if he gets on top, great. And if he ends up on the bottom, well, then he's done for. But he's injured or he's compromised in some way. So you leak that information out. And well, how bad is it? It's pretty bad, man. He's having trouble breathing. Why doesn't Isaac Dalgarian just pull out of the fight? Okay, this is where we get into some slippery waters here, right? So Isaac Dalgarian, I would say, has no money. And I'm not saying he's broke. I'm not saying this man is broke at all. I'm just saying when you look at, let me just bring up Isaac Dalgarian and close a couple. Share this tab instead. Okay, Dalgarian, the Midwest Choppa. Okay, he has 9 professional fights. Okay, he's 29 years old. Comes from a long wrestling background. So at 29 years old, his knees would be sore, his hip would be sore, his back would be sore. And yet nearly 30, he's just breaking into the UFC. These early fights in his career, these amateur fights, he did for free. These fights for FAC, that's James Krause's promotion, 7, 8, 9, 11, against guys that were 2-2, 0-0, 2-3, 1-1. I can guarantee you from being a matchmaker that he's getting paid about $300, $400 for those fights. He may have had a sweetheart deal, you know, $400 plus $400. He's getting paid $800 if he won the fight. But, you know, between cutting weight and nutrition and buying the good food and, you know, training personals and you have a Muay Thai coach and a Jiu-Jitsu coach, and you're not making any money. So he effectively made no money throughout this period of time. You get into the UFC and you beat Francis Marshall, right? No performance bonus, but you beat him on an entry level 12-12, just $24,000. Your next fight against Christian Rodriguez, you'd be on a 14-14, and he loses. So now he's made his $24,000, and the loss to Christian Rodriguez puts him at $38,000. You'd have that same 14-14 against Brendan Morat, which, again, he beats Brendan Morat, but there's no performance bonus because he's a minus 2,500 favorite over the worst guy that's been signed to the division in quite some time. Through those first three fights, this man's made less than $100,000. His debut against Francis Marshall is 2 years ago. August 2023. It's more than 2 years ago, okay? So in over 2 years of being a UFC athlete, he's made less than $100,000. After taxes, he's basically getting the same wages as, you know, most people that are working a full-time job. This guy's a professional athlete, the highest level. He's had 3 fights. He's got 2-1. Not super active. He's got injuries. Financially, he's not there yet. And now it's all bearing on him that this ain't it. So he does an interview. And again, this is all online. You can watch all this stuff online, right? This is an interview where he talks about how fighters should get a piece of the action that's being bet. He's not saying, like, I'm looking to throw a fight. But it gives you a glimpse inside of his mindset on this one, okay? Inside of his mindset, because he does this interview, and he says, you know, we're the ones risking our lives. We're the ones that are risking our health. And these guys are betting, I think we should get a 3 to 5% cut of the money. If you're betting on me, I want in. Okay. So one, he's down this betting thing. But two, what he's saying is I need money. Do you think Charles Oliveira or Sean O'Malley or Marc-Andre Barrio or Chris Curtis or anybody that just fights and has been tenured vet, you think any of those guys are saying I need a cut of the wagering action? No, you know, because they're prize fighters that make money by fighting. He's 29 years old. His body's getting sore, not because 29's old. 29 ain't old is all, at all. He wrestled a long time. He has 9 pro fights. Doesn't have 20 fights. Doesn't have 25 fights. He financially is not well off. He is, I want a cut of this money. I need this money. And now you're posed with one of two things could probably happen. I'm going to take the common approach. This is what I think happened. And then we'll talk about the conspiracy theory approach. Thing number one happens when he, and we're just going to call it a rib injury just because it's just, we're just using that as an example. Could have been anything. Could have been anything. He could have been puking all night. He could have been shitting his brains out all night. Maybe he's got tuberculosis. I don't know. But there's something going on with him that someone within his team is like, oh man, this don't look good. And then leaks it to somebody who possibly leaks it to somebody else, or the four bets all on the same thing at the Hard Rock in that close of a time. That's the same guy. Maybe with three beards with him. Maybe he puts the bet, three beards do it. Maybe he hits it individually. I don't know. In any event, it gets leaked, okay? So if you're Dalgarian, it's like, hey, man, you shouldn't fight. You should pull out of this fight right now. You should cancel this fight right now. It's like, I'm almost 30 years old. I am broke. I've made less than $100,000 over the last 2 years. But what people don't understand is a regular person has a regular set of bills. A professional athlete who's paying all of his own stuff is not afforded that. Again, he's got a strength and conditioning coach he has to pay. He has a nutritionist. You're buying this, or the good food, the organic food. You're trying to put stuff in your, you got to go get the massages. You got to get the cupping. You got to get the acupuncture. You got to get your neck checked out. You got to go into the doctor and get an x-ray on this. You got to go in over here. You're driving to this gym so you can do jiu-jitsu. Then you got to drive across town to over to this gym so you can get some other work in with these guys. And it's constant travel. It's constant. You got to be making big money or you ain't making no money. And I'm not trying to bash the guy. I'm not trying to bash the guy at all. I'm just saying, as you can see, that it's laid out in front of you. Okay, he's got a 12,000 hit here that made 24,000. He's got one here that made 40, that he would have made 28,000. The sponsorships, they'd say, well, you wore the trunks. Here's a free pair of shorts, a t-shirt, and $2,500. Because you don't have 5 fights with the organization. So you're on the bare minimum list. That if he was hurt and they said you need to pull out, it's like, I financially cannot pull out of this fight. I cannot pull out of this fight. Maybe he has a mortgage. Maybe more than likely he just has rent. But I'm behind a payment on this, and I'm behind a payment on my car, and my car needs new brakes, and the insurance is coming up, and I got to do this sticker permit for whatever, and I got to pay. It's life. And everybody knows it because everybody's going through it. Well, imagine you were like, shit, I'm $10,000 in debt, or $15,000 in debt, or $20,000 in debt. And now his contract is a 16 and 16. Plus, they're going to give him $3,000 to wear the shorts. And so he probably walks away with close to 20 grand. Once this fight, in loss, he'll get 20 grand. If he pulls out, the UFC pays him zero. And then because he's hurt, he's going to have to take 6 months off. And then they're going to rebook him, and hopefully that fight materializes. And by that point, he's going to be $40,000 in debt. So do you think he's going to pull out? No. You mean he's got a broken hand? You think he's going to pull out? No. Because he's in survival mode. He needs to fight. It's not I want to fight. He needs to fight. It'd be, I don't know if he's got a family, but imagine he's got kids. Imagine this guy's got a wife and kids. And he's got to justify to his wife why he's constantly away from his family training. And I can't make it to Sharice's birthday party this weekend. And I can't go to Terry's birthday party. And I can't go to this family function. And I'm training. And I'm constantly hurt. And I'm constantly stressed. And I'm constantly banged up. And I've run my family into financial ruin. And now I'm getting ready for this fight. And I hurt myself last night. or I got ill last night, but I got to take care of my family. So, and I'm just using this as a random, it's my theory on the thing, but it's just a random, scenario. It's just a random scenario. Well, what if? But you sitting here listening to this, you may be thinking the same thing. If someone offered you, hey man, I'll pay you $20,000 American to get punched in the face and get knocked out. So I don't really want to get knocked out. What if I get punched in the face and I fall down and then you punch me a few times while I'm turtled up and somebody says, stop, stop. And the guy stops. It's like, yeah, sure. Yeah, a lot of people would take the $20,000. What if you said, well, what if a guy grabs your neck and gives you a squeeze and you get choked out, you tap, and I give you $20,000. Would you be down with that? It's like, yeah, I can. And he didn't throw the fight like I'm going to go out there and lose on purpose as much as it's I'm going to go out there and try knowing that I can't win. I can't win this fight, but I need the payday, so I'm going to go out. That's what I think happened. The second side would be the conspiracy theory, which is not wrong, which is this guy probably also still needs the money. And so now if he takes the $20,000 that he's guaranteed, I'm going to get paid $20,000 for this if I lose. If I was to put $20,000 on myself to lose by first round submission, pay like $160,000. So if you're having financial problems, you're 29, you're 30, you're sore, you're only fighting once or twice a year, you're not making that big money yet. If you got the family, if you got the mortgage, if you got the car payment, what's $20,000 going to do for you? What's $160,000 going to do for you? Interesting. So why not bet against yourself to lose by first round submission? And how do we achieve that? Okay, well, if I get knocked out, I lose everything. This is bad. So I'm not going to stand and throw punches at all. Fight starts. I'm going to throw one kick. Boom. Right to the takedown. I know this guy's got a nasty guillotine. Everyone's watched tape on him. He's got a nasty guillotine. And though he got deep on the takedown, and the commentators were like, whoa, he was really deep on that, and Yuval stuffed it. And Yuval, big for the weight class. Duvall was a four-time Cuban national wrestling champion. It's not like this guy was in on the fix. It wasn't like this guy's some bum that got a free win because the other guy was hurt. This guy's a problem. So it would be easy to fix a fight to him. I'm just going to shoot a takedown. I almost got it, but instead I'm just going to allow him to sprawl out, end on top. And I know 100% everybody knows, because if you've ever watched Duvall fight, he's going to grab the guillotine. He loves the guillotine. So if I shoot the double leg, allow him to fold on top, he sprawls out, he's on top, he's going to grab the neck. Why didn't he just tap right there? Well, that would look pretty obvious. Okay, so then I will, scramble and let him take my back. Okay, takes the back, grabs the choke. Why didn't he just tap immediately? Because again, it looks pretty obvious. If you watch the first few times he gets out of the choke, he's fighting the hands. He's fighting the hands. He realizes you got to go top hand. And Duvall, to his credit, he's going top hand. He's going gable grip. He's switching back to it. He's trying to bury his hand behind the head. He's just switching from choke to choke to choke. He did everything right. You can't fault him in the slightest bit. Very nice performance from him. I'm not shitting on him at all. It was a nice performance. I'm just saying, if you're Dalgarian, he did fight the hands for a little bit. And then by the end, it's like he punches Duvall a few times. And then Duvall's switching grips. So he knows in his head, okay, this one's not going to get it done. I can feel that there's space. I can feel that he's breathing. I can feel I don't have that same grip. So I'm switched to the gable. So while he's switching, it's like, this is your chance to try to do something. But it just seemed like Dalgarian was cool to just hang out in the choke. He wasn't really trying to defend the top hand a few times. And then eventually he just kind of got his hands by his side. Like go ahead and give me a squeeze. So Michael Chiesa was very upset about it. Daniel Cormier was very upset about it. And I don't even think those guys were alerted of this betting situation. I don't think. I think they were just looking at it. Even Dean Thomas had a hell of a smirk on his face while Chiesa was going off. Just kind of like, yeah, why would you stop fighting the hands randomly? You're fighting the top hand, right? You got out of the choke twice, three times fighting the top hand, and then just inexplicably you let it happen. The guys that defend it say, well, man, he didn't quit because look at it, he defended the choke three times. But yeah, he's not trying to get caught. He's not trying to say, hey, everybody, I'm going to throw this fight. You got to make it look somewhat good. He took no damage. He still lost by sub in the first round, and he has idiots now standing up for him, being like, he fought the choke three times. This is a good way to go out. This is a good way to make it look. You know what a bad way to make it look is? Like Derek Minner, where you just flop over, and everyone's like, whoa, there it is, there it is, there it is. This, I'm going to be like, man, I shot the takedown. Oh, this guy's so big, and he's really good. He's 10-0. This guy's really good. He's 10-0, and he's way bigger than me. And Dana posted a thing on social media. It's like Dalgarian warm-up, fight coming up next, whatever, Dalgarian warm-up. And you can see him hit and miss, and just you can just see right in this clip, like there's no explosiveness to him. There's not, he's getting ready to go fight. He's hitting a big, it's like he's just floating out some very basic, don't move too much, man. You're hurt or you're sick or something. Word got out, and it was right. So if you had money on him, you had ample opportunity to hit it the other way. And part of the reason why this number kept moving is because once the initial line movement took place, the people figured out, whoa, something's up. And then the public also just got right behind it. People started hedging out tickets. People started putting money on Del Valle. People started chasing that first round submission prop, which is why a lot of the books pulled it off. And then sure enough, he goes out there and he does good. So there's two ways you can look at this. Either one, there's just a legitimate injury, but this man is not in a financial position to pull out of the fight. So he takes the fight, and this is the outcome. Number two, more nefarious, he threw the fight. He threw the fight, and he either bet against himself, or he had somebody bet against himself, or if you wanted to go down that road, that would be the other road that you would go down. Again, the James Krause connection and the Derek Minner thing, and just so many different ways that you could possibly look at that one, but greasy. Yeah. Greasy. That's all I can really leave you with. I'm sure it'll get investigated. For Dalgarian, it wasn't one of these, I'm just going to take one payday on this thing and then bail out. I don't think he'll get cut. If they investigate it and they see that he was doing something wrong, then maybe they'll say, hey, you know, you if you did throw this, or you did bet against yourself, or there's a message of you sending out to say, at that point he'd get cut. For what it is, he lost to a guy that's 10-0, who's a really solid prospect. I don't think it's the end of the world. I don't think they'll cut him. But yeah, Dalgarian could never be trusted ever again. And his reputation is certainly shot to bits. And you can see books like Will Hill and Caesar's Palace are refunding people who lost money on Dalgarian. Lots of people are very upset. The fact that a legitimate bookie would be willing to give back money because they think that a fight was shady, that tells you everything you need to know. At what point was book ever going to admit anything ever? And whereas people will say, well, it's Dalgarian's fault because he was hurt and he fought hurt and you're supposed to disclose it to the commission and this is bullshit. The thing is that they kind of all fought hurt. You guys remember when TJ Dillashaw fought with the shoulder injury, right? It's like, why would you fight? I don't know. It was a big payday and a big opportunity and he took it anyways. Magomed Ankalaev just lost to Pereira not that long ago. Comes out, oh, I was getting injections on my ribs. I have this rib injury. You know, it's pretty assumed that they're all hurt. It's just you think they're hurt, but they're able to compete. And Dalgarian was obviously hurt and not able to compete, but opted to just compete anyways. And then lost. So, you know, people are obviously going to be bitter about it. If you won money fading him, you're happy. Whatever. It's the fight game. Shit happens. I watched a tennis match. The guy was hurt. He still played. I watched a football game. The guy's clearly hurt. This is a real story. I watched the baseball, the World Series, Blue Jays last night. Both guys, both teams, all these guys, they're all hurt. They hit the ball. They're trying to run to first base. They're trying to run to second base. They're wincing. But they're diving out there. They're playing out there. You want it so bad. You're a competitor. You're an athlete. You've competed your entire life. You're willing to go through with some pain. And then you lose, and it's like, well, I only lost because I was hurt. But it's the price that you got to pay sometimes. Jeremiah Wells versus Themba Garimbo. Not a good fight. Not a good fight, but yeah, Jeremiah Wells, real good adjustments, really. I thought Themba in the first round, the four takedowns, not that there was a whole lot of striking going on, but just, yeah, lots of control time, physically stronger. We knew he'd be bigger. We knew he'd be stronger. We knew that it was mostly going to just play out in the clinch and on the ground, and that, yeah, bigger, stronger, younger, possibly better gas tank. Themba Garimbo, first round, looked just like that. It was like Chang Ho Lee. First round, you're feeling pretty okay about it. second and the third round, the adjustments were made by Jeremiah Wells. All of a sudden, he started getting the takedowns, and he's just a much better grappler. BJJ black belt, longtime black belt, very physically strong. That short, stocky stature, whereas standing, he doesn't have much range. He's got to explode into everything. On the ground, the guy's very physically strong. He's got a good ground game. If he gets on top of you, you're probably not going anywhere, and so that was kind of the problem. Thamba was able to get Wells down, but Wells was just able to reverse, get back on top, shoot a takedown of his own. When he would get on top, Grimbo had no answer. Did it in the second round, did it in the third round. Pretty clear 29-28. Lost the first, made the adjustments, and came back. This is another fight that I want to apologize. Thamba was minus 130. It wasn't like he was a runaway favorite, and you knew it was going to be a grappling battle. You knew that Wells had some good qualities to him and was possibly able to win this fight. It was a close 29-28 fight that, given a couple takedowns the other way and a little more control time the other way, could have been different. But it was a bad pick all the same because it didn't win. So Thamba Grimbo, not good. Took a year off coming into this one. So we're expecting to see some improvements. But it was the same old Thamba Grimbo. Unwilling to strike. Grappling, you know, predicated on just getting takedowns and some control time. But no threat of the submissions. No threat of the ground and pound. No dominating control time where you can't get back up. No mat returns. When he's on his back, woof. Non-existent get-up game. Had made no improvements. He's a little bit older now. He got accused of stealing some money to build a library and Zimbabwe, I believe it was. He's been accused of, you know, taking some money and being a scam artist of sorts and being kicked out of a number of gyms and comes up with these stories that may or may not be true, and he draws sympathy and The Rock buys him a house and Dana White says, this is my guy, and Colby Covington befriends him, buys him food, and then all of a sudden he turns his back on Colby Covington. And when he loses his home country back in Africa, they celebrated, and he claims his family members are trying to poison him. It's a really weird thing going on with Thamba Grimbo that I think people largely ignore. But as long as you win, people don't care. When you start just mailing it in and having bad performances, I think the UFC is going to move on from this guy pretty soon. And then, you know, do you cut a guy like that? Do you say, well, I guarantee you Thamba's not making the average guy who's got three shitty wins in the UFC kind of money. Bisato, Pete Rodriguez, Ramin Brahimaj, that aged real well. Nico Price is a good win on paper, but it's a much older version. He's got four wins in the UFC. I bet you this guy's getting paid some decent money because of the story, because of The Rock, because of the, we did a little package on him and we gave him a better contract and we want to help him out. And then all of a sudden you start looking at the numbers and say, hey, we're paying Thamba Grimbo $50,000 and $50,000, $100,000 if he wins, and he's putting out bum performances. And I'm going to say bum performance. Jeremiah Wells did everything right. So I don't want to take away from what Wells did by saying Grimbo did absolutely nothing, but he really just didn't do much. And I can't see them being down with having someone on the roster that's just going to take you down and hold you down without really putting on a show. You know, you're compensating them fairly. So whatever they do, but quality win for Jeremiah Wells, all the same. Made the adjustments. That's the key here. Waldo Cortez Acosta versus Ante. We were doing really good on this card. And then a little combination of the Isaac Dalgarian fight and, yeah, it was mostly the Isaac Dalgarian fight. Maybe Thamba Grimbo a little bit. Mostly this Dalgarian fight kind of has left a bad taste in my mouth. The props started to fall off a little bit. The only way to possibly get this thing back on track is we need Waldo and we need a hit in the main event. But we do have a Waldo by TKO at plus 300. So like that's kind of the only thing that might help get us out of Dodge here. And this is just another one of your super weird fights, man. When people say, oh, this is an easy pick and this is an easy win, I'm not just saying for this fight, I'm saying for any fight. People are always saying, I told you this is going to happen. Fights can take any number of outcomes, man. Guy's winning, and then all of a sudden he loses. A guy's losing, and then all of a sudden he wins. A guy's smashing him on the feet, and then he one kick, he slips. The other guy jumped on top of him. The slip changed everything. Oh, his mouthpiece fell out, and the referee didn't notice it. And then all of a sudden, that changed everything. The guy grabbed the cage. The guy poked his eye. The guy nutshot at him. It changes the outcome for everything. But you only get to watch these fights one time. So there's only one outcome. So people will get really high on themselves and be like, I told you this guy would win. But he won this time because of this one circumstance. And this is a perfect example. This fight is a perfect example of that. One guy wins in the first round. And then the fight gets called off. And then it gets restarted. And then the other guy wins in the first round. It's the fight game, man. It's who lands first sometimes, and who gets that better punch off quicker, and who bobbed when they should have weaved and who zigged when they should have zagged. And just a lot of outcomes are possible. But yeah, this one was kind of weird, like poetically a little bit weird. Ante is a top training partner of Tom Aspinall. And we just know from last week, Tom with the eye poke, and it's the big story of the week. And Tom's got an eye patch. Did he fake it? Did he not fake it? And Tom's saying you should disqualify Ciryl Gane. No contest? Are you crazy? You should disqualify him. And poke a guy in the eye should be an immediate disqualification. Not immediate disqualification. In you know, the context of he got poked in the eye and he couldn't continue, and there's a few of them poked in both eyes. In that context, he should have been disqualified. And so now his training partner goes out and pokes a guy in the eye, which leads to a finish. So, you know, that's just the game. Tom can say, oh, well, you are 100% knew you were doing that. You knew you did that. People who poke people in the eye, they have control. And then your top training partner, the one guy you won't fight in the division, does it, right? So it's like, do you have control? But I've changed my stances on eye pokes a little bit in that automatic point deduction going forward. So it should be automatic. There's no accidental eye poke. There isn't. Because when you're throwing your punch, you have the option to keep your hand closed or to have it out. I understand parrying. I get it. Believe me. Spend a lot of time boxing. Spend a lot of time doing Muay Thai. Spend a lot of time with strikers. I totally get the open finger, and I agree. And I would do the same thing myself. Okay? But if you're coming forward with fingers open, or if a guy's coming forward to you and your fingers open, or you rake a guy in the eye, it's you have the option. The thing with a groin strike, and although a groin strike, well, let's avoid those too. I agree. You go to kick and the guy moves and it strays, or you knee the guy in the body, but your foot maybe strayed, or you guys both kick at the same time. If you're doing it a couple times, yeah, that's about 100. The first time, it's like I could see it being an accident. A cage grab is not an accident. You meant to do it. A knee to the head of a grounded opponent is not an accident. You meant to do it. An eye poke, it's not, I didn't do it on purpose, but it happened because you chose to have your fingers open. So just if all of a sudden you were losing a point on the first eye poke, and the eye poke has to be like, you can look at a replay and see a clear eye poke. You can't have fighters all of a sudden being all, oh, he poked my eye. It has to be like a real eye poke. And there could be an accident. Oh, it's a little, he tried to push off his face. Well, should you be doing that? Well, that's a fight. I pushed off his face. And maybe it was like, there was a little graze. The guy just needed 30 seconds. He's okay. But the second you can look to a replay and see a finger go in an eye, or, you know, a real damage has been occurred. Well, it's changed the conditions of this fight now. You have to take a point. In this case, it's the weirdest. So Ante lands the eye poke, but the referee don't see it. So then Ante lands a barrage of punches. Mark Smith doesn't see the eye poke, even though Waldo puts his hand right on his eyes. Oh, man. He then shells up and Ante unloads on him. So there's damage caused by the eye poke, and there's some damage caused by he was allowed to land 3 or 4 or 5 punches after the eye poke. Smith calls it, but he doesn't call it. He jumps in and he intervenes, but he doesn't wave it off. So, like, Ante's celebrating and his corner's celebrating. And because he didn't jump in right away, even though Waldo alerted him, hey, my eye, you allowed him to take a bunch of punches. So you've made the decision. I don't believe him. I think it was a punch that caused the eye. So I don't believe him. Now you're stopping it. But you're not waving it off. But you've allowed him to take the additional shots. And then they review it. It's clear as day, an eye poke. And then they talk about it a little bit. And then the commentators are saying, well, you can't restart the fight. But then probably because they're in the apex and there's literally 25 people there and 24 of them are on the UFC payroll, they decide, let's just restart the fight anyways, which I'm cool with. Because otherwise, if I don't hit Acosta first round knockout for plus 300, it's not a good night for me. So I'm hoping they restart this fight. Because, yeah, it was an eye poke. It wasn't like I thought Acosta looked bad in the fight. He looked fine. He got poked in the eye. The fight got stopped. I'm down to restart this thing. Plus, the breakdown show, the Boogie Beatdown on Wednesday, we talked about this extensively, that Ante's a first-round guy. He comes at you hot in the first round. That's what he did. I'm down to restart this fight. Let it go into a second and third round, see what happens. So when they restarted, I was totally cool with that. but they didn't take a point away. So now I have video replay evidence that you didn't accidentally poke him in the eye. He's up against the cage, and here's your hand, and here's your hand, and there's your hand going in his eye, and then there's a right hand, and then here, and then here, here's him looking at me, and then here's him shelling up, and then here's you hitting him a bunch more times. Does that not warrant a point? And for Acosta, his eye's now banged up. He's holding his eye. I'm down to fight, but I'm compromised. It's at least take a point. Not that it mattered. This fight was probably never going to decision. There's probably not a whole lot of world that exists that this fight was going to go to decision. But at the very least, just do your job and take a point to set a precedent for other guys. No, Mark Smith's just like, let's roll it back. And people can say adrenaline dump, but I don't think it was an adrenaline dump because adrenaline dump would have been like this fight kept going for 7, 8 more minutes. And then it was like, oh, my body, this fight didn't go on very long after they resumed it. It wasn't an adrenaline dump. It was he thought in his head, this guy's done. I landed this combo. Yeah, they're telling me it's an eye poke, but I was celebrating. I was yelling over at DC, what's up? What's up? I beat this guy. I was all over the moon, pumped up. I think I won. I think he's hurt. He's wincing his eye. As soon as they say restart, I'm going to bum rush him. I'm going to just come right at him. Kind of like when Drew Dober decided to kick Kyle Preplick in the dick. And then Kyle takes 4.5 minutes. He's, oh my God. When the fight started, they didn't touch gloves and play patty cake and show him a little respect. The second it resumed, he bum rushed him. Because what better time to bum rush a guy than when he's compromised? And so I just poked you in the eye. I can see you're visibly wincing this thing out. I just had you dead to rights. And how did he win? What was the sequence? The sequence was just throw a 5-6 punch combination, he'll shell up, and then that was it. So he basically tried to do the same thing. They hit restart, and Ante walked in recklessly. I'm just gonna go bum rush this guy and put him away. And Acosta was sitting on the counter. Boom, hits him, floors him. That's all she wrote. I'm down because, yeah, whatever. I was on Acosta, but I'm down because to me, the right man won. There's a lot of people out there acting like Ante's the victim. This is bullshit. He won. And then they say he didn't win. And then they say you got to fight again. And then he loses. No, that's bullshit. Should have been a no contest. It should have been a win. Should have been a win for Ante. And if it's not a win for Ante, should have been a no contest. And they're only saying that because it's now a losing bet. And I'll admit the Dalgarian noise, a lot of it is disgruntled gamblers because they lost a bet. A lot of it is that fight was probably, if it wasn't fixed, it was some dirty shit going on. But a lot of the people upset are the disgruntled gamblers. Well, the Waldo Ante fight is the exact same thing. The only possible way that you believe Ante was the victim is because you lost money. This is the only possible way. He did. What did he do? He came in, he poked a man in the eye after his training partner just made this whole hoopla last week. Ante does it himself and then cheers and celebrates. And then they resume it, and he tries to get the jump on this guy immediately, and then gets knocked out. He's the victim. He's the one that did the eye poke, and they didn't take a point away from him too. They gave him a favor. Yeah, it's okay. It's okay. And then you got Waldo's on the mic afterwards, and he's just like, "My eye's 20%. I could barely see out of it." He won, and immediately starts grabbing his eye again, being like, "Oh my God, my eye!" So no doubt it had affected him. He called Tom Aspinall out to fight. He didn't say, "Tom, what's up? I'm fine with an eye injury." And you didn't. He never mentioned Tom's eye injury at all. He just said, "Tom, I'd like to fight you." Why? Because Tom's a champ, and you're always trying to fight up and fight the number one guy and get a title fight. That's where the money is. So that's all he was trying to do. But he wasn't calling him out for being soft or anything like that. I think it's the rest of the world sees, well, Tom could have done it because this guy just did it. So Tom's soft because he didn't do it. And Waldo just proved that not only can you do it, but Waldo won. So Tom could have won too, but Tom didn't do it because Tom's soft. Nothing to do with that. Waldo admitted, "My eye's 20%. This guy poked me in the eye and then punched me in the head 5 times afterwards. Didn't lose a point. Now I have limited visibility in my eye. And if there was 4 more fights to go in the biggest fight of my career, would you continue? Would you take the no contest?" Waldo could have taken the no contest. If he would have said, I can't continue. I can't see. Or, no, man, this guy punched me up a little bit afterwards and I'm not feeling it. They'd look at the replay. They'd see what's an eye poke led to the TKO. They'd call it no contest. He wanted to fight. The difference is Tom makes millions of dollars per fight. So he can afford to sit one out. He can afford to just get his show money and book this thing again. Waldo makes a lot more money than a guy like Dalgarian. But probably in a closer situation at Dalgarian where it's like, I need to fight. Who cares? Let's just get this thing over with. I'll knock this guy out with one eye. Who gives a shit? And it ended up working. But that doesn't change anything for Tom. That doesn't make Tom a worse guy or no heart or anything like that. It's just Waldo's a gangster. That's lucky that Ante didn't just bide his time. I'm just going to wait. I'm going to get a read on how's he throwing his punches. And I'm going to get a read on how's he interpreting the stuff that I'm throwing back from this side. I'm going to move to this side, set up my punches on the right, on the left. He's poked in the right eye. Move to this side, see if I can draw something out of him, and then blitz him. No, he was just like, yeah, I poked him in the eye, and then as soon as they say go, I'm coming. I'm just going to run right after him. He's a hurt dog. He's a hurt dog because I poked him in the eye, and karma bit him in the ass. So, you know, there's people saying F the UFC and it's crooked and it's corrupt and they're saying the Dalgarian fight all day long. And but then looping this one in too, like and the one guy won and then they stopped it and then they restarted again. This one I can understand, to be honest with you. Why'd they restart it? Mark never waved it off. So therefore it never stopped. Therefore, it never restarted from it's over. It restarted from there was a foul and we're gonna take a timeout to look at it. And why did everybody get in the cage? I don't know. That was a blunder. But it is what it is. Steve Garcia versus David Onama. I mean, nothing to say here other than Steve hits like a hammer. My God. You just look at this guy, and, you know, you can say, oh, well, man, Charlie Ontiveros knocked him down twice. Masha shot two knockdowns in it and put him away. Shaolin Nurmagomedov knocked him out. It's like, yeah, man, I don't know what he's done to reinvent himself. It's not steroids. It's not cheating. It's good old hard work, baby. Steve Garcia is just on a hell of a run, man. Chase Hooper, I think this is a good win. Melk Costa, that's a good win. Kyle Nelson, all things considered, he took him out in one round. That's a pretty good win. Calvin Kattar, he becomes the only guy to ever knock down Calvin Kattar. Doesn't knock him out. Only guy to ever put him down, considering the bangers that Calvin Kattar shared the cage with. Quality win. And then he goes out there and knocks out David Onama in 3.5 minutes. Outstruck him 33-22 in the significant strikes. Backed him up. Left hand was money. Looked big for the weight class. Dog walks him. Onama is a problem early and was absolutely reduced to rubble like nothing. Tremendous performance from Steve Garcia, who looked even better than he did in the Calvin Kattar fight and instantly jumps himself into the top. I mean, top 10, 100%. But, like, I don't know if I want to quite say he's a top 5 featherweight, but interesting fights for Steve. And you start knocking off give him Yair Rodriguez or something next. Or give him, I don't want to say Brian Ortega. He can't make 145 anymore. But, and obviously, he's not ready for an Alexander Volkanovski. But there's so many good fights, man. There's good fights for the guy. Even if he was to fight a Dan Ige, I don't care, man. Let him fight somebody that can just bang with him. Because he's got some tremendous power. Does he got a deficiency in the grappling? His takedown defense is pretty solid. Being that he's big for the weight class, he probably keep these fights standing. He's now on a 8-fight winning streak, sorry. I mean, yeah, things are turning up. Mean Steve Garcia. For David Onama, it's definitely a setback. And the realistic part of it, well, I'll give you the real take and I'll give you the funny ha-ha take and then it's time to get out of here. But the realistic take of it is, yeah, he's just not the better man. I mean, in a lot of these fights, Jonathan Pierce, wrestler, Gabriel Santos, wrestler, Roberto Romero, short notice. Onama was a 9-1 favorite over him. Giga Katz, very one-dimensional as a striker, so he's able to take him down. But there hasn't been any big wowing performances. Not saying he's got durability issues. He had never been knocked out. He'd been hurt a little bit from Nate Landwehr, but that was mostly just took him into deep waters, but durability's always been on point. And again, he's a bit of a fast starter that fades later, but this is just a route from the get-go. Really made him look bad. I don't think it's anything other than Steve Garcia was the better man that day. He hits hard. He stood his ground. He came forward. You got shell-shocked, and that was the end of it. the conspiracy theory part of it is David Onama is the chief training partner of Isaac Dolgarian at Factory X Muay Thai. Not only that, but he has also spent time with James Krause, and he has also spent time with Derek Minner. They're all from that same team. They're all from that same little, you know, FAC setup and the Kansas guys and Glory MMA and Fitness and same training partners. And I know this will sound like, oh, well, Cody's just saying this after the fact, because it's easier to say after the fact. But I took a shit on that Isaac Dolgarian. I hedged out a little bit, but I still had faith that Dolgarian was just going to win. And then when he didn't, it was what it was. Soon as Dolgarian lost, we start rolling plays onto Steve Garcia. Because if that's how bad Dolgarian looks, then how bad's David Onama going to look? And David Onama's never really looked great in any of his fights to begin with. You got a bad stinky feeling here. Factory X Muay Thai has not had a great year. And your guy who's been warming up good and he's feeling good just rolls over like that. And now Onama has to watch that. And now his coaches are being questioned. And now the vibe's all bad. And then he's got to go out and fight Steve Garcia, who's big and frothing from the mouth and southpaw and coming forward with left hands over and over and over again. Like, I wouldn't say he quit, but he froze up. He froze up. And it's like, well, Steve's not just going to take me down and choke me out like Dalval did. Steve's just going to barrage me with punches. So what's my best way to get out of this one? Just to shell up and let the ref say, defend yourself, and then have them wave it off and not go unconscious, which he didn't, and not really put myself in harm's way, not try to overextend myself, not really try to do anything. I'm just going to back up and back up. And back up, and back up, and back up, and then cover up, and then the fight gets waved off. Dolgarian worked one. I wouldn't be surprised to see old teammate David Onama and James Krause and Derek Minner and all the boys worked one for old time's sake. So that's the conspiracy theory. You know, you can't buy into that stuff all the time, because then you live your life just never trusting anything, and then you got trust issues, and then it's just not me. I can understand a lot of things are circumstantial. A lot of things are coincidences. A lot of things are just wrong place, wrong time. Not everything is bigger than it needs to be. Certain things are, don't get me wrong. Certain things, it's 100%. It's not a tinfoil hat thing. It's a real thing. Certain things, you're kind of just leading your imagination. Your imagination is playing tricks on you and just kind of leading you down that road. So I've presented you guys with the facts and just the stats, and then just leave it up to you to make your own opinion on it, which is what I do, right? Try to do some reading, try to see what the situation is, and go from there. But while it was just an eventful card, seeing how it was a random show at the Apex and a lot of nobody cares type fights, and then all of a sudden you've got a major betting scandal comes out of it, and you got a major rules and regulations scandal comes out of it, and you got a number of fighters who are likely getting released from their contract. I don't think Dana White thought his mentions would be going off as much as they did for a random Apex show. But yeah, that's about it for me. So UFC Vegas 110 in the books. All we can do is dust ourselves off, move on. Top line hit at least, a couple props hit at least, but hopefully next time. I normally I'll say something like hope to do better next time, but it's not so much do better, it's I hope we get the bounces going our way. Like hopefully the guy that we picked isn't the one who's got some massive injury coming into the fight, or hopefully the guy that the refs and judges decide to screw isn't some anchor that we have this week. Because the sport is very fun to watch. It's very entertaining to consume. And of course, we're bettors and we're gamblers, and we love to bet a little bit of action on this as well. That makes it extra fun. Don't take that away from us. If this becomes an unbettable sport and every week is the same, they're changing rules and they're changing, this guy's getting favoritism and that is not how it's supposed to be, and eye pokes are changing things, and the groin strikes and the disqualifications and the no contests and the everyone's fighting hurt because they got no money. It's different when you're looking at a football game where it's like, yeah, I'm hurt and there's, I don't know, is there 16 weeks in football? There's 16 games, and I'm hurt. Well, I may miss two or three games. If you're a star player or one of your guys on the Edmonton Oilers or the Toronto Maple Leafs or one of the hockey teams, they're hurt. Let's take a little bit of time off. Those guys got contracts that they get paid, right? These guys are only getting paid if they fight. So if they're not fighting, they're not getting paid. They're human beings. They got bills, they got families, and they got overhead. So they're going to fight hurt, and it's not disclosed. No one's telling you, hey, Patrick Mahomes has got a lower body injury, and it's taped up. That they all tell you that. He's playing football. They tell you that. This is fighting. They don't tell you anything. It's like this guy actually got knocked out 2 weeks ago in a sparring session, and he has a staph infection, and he's broken three of the toes in his foot and can't kick with his left leg. But he really needs the money, man. He hasn't fought in 8 months, and he pulled out of his last fight with a wrist injury, and he's behind on this payment, and his girlfriend's going to leave him. And hurt game, man. Hurt business. And they're fighting hurt, and that's changing everything. You watch tape. This guy does this, this, and this. You watch him fight. He doesn't do none of those things because he's hurt, and he's unable to do any of those things, and it's just not disclosed. So don't let the sport go down that way. You know, clean it up a little bit. Let everybody have a good time. That's it for all. That's it for me. See you guys next week. See you guys next week. We'll get back on the train, some regional picks as well, and go from there. But thanks for joining me for the official UFC Vegas 110 recap. I'll catch you guys later.